finally, here we are, almost one-third into the semester, and we finally get around to defining in detail what these market averages, market indexes, these benchmarks, these standards that we've been using all semester long, the Dow, the S&P 500, the NASDAQ, what are they? Well, they are measures, standards, benchmarks that we use to determine and report to the world how we're doing. So let's get started on slide 48. How can we say that stocks have returned approximately 10% over the past 70, 80 years? Well, the industry uses market averages and indices, benchmarks, standards, used to measure the general behavior of securities, in this case stocks, prices, by reflecting either the average price behavior, that's a market average, or the relational price behavior, that's a market index, of representative groups of securities at any given point in time. And we're discussing stocks here, but there are also benchmark indices for bonds and real estate and other asset classes. Look, you can't live in this society and not hear about these things every day on the news. The Dow went down, the NASDAQ went up. Okay, big deal. The differences between a market average and market index are subtle, and most people don't even know that there are a difference. And in reality, in practice, we don't have to worry about it. Slide number 49. A market average uses share price calculation. It looks solely at the price of the stock without regard to the market value. Well, the most important index that uses the average is the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the Dow. Most all the others use a market-weighted calculation, a market index, which takes into account the actual value of the stock. Because if you look at at 500 stocks, the S&P 500, the largest stocks, the largest companies, are far larger than the smallest of the 500. So the idea here is we're going to say, look, a company that's worth more is going to have more weight. That's why we often call it a market-weighted calculation. The larger the market share, the more influence the security, in this case stocks, will have in the index. And you know, the most popular is the Standard & Poor's 500 index. And these were generally regarded as a better measure until the bubble of the late 1990s, when, as we saw in Chapter 4, we discussed the bubble of the late 90s having an outsized influence on the Standard & Poor's 500 index funds, and it's happening now. It's the same thing is happening now. The 10 largest companies in the S&P 500 dwarf most of the other stocks in the S&P 500. So now, let's take a look at the granddaddy of them all, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the Dow Average, started in 1896 by Charles Dow, who was one of the people who started Dow Jones, which is the company that publishes the Wall Street Journal. In 2007, Rupert Murdoch of Fox News fame went to the family that owned the Dow and said, we want to buy it from you. And most of them said, no way, we're not letting Fox News get a hold of the Wall Street Journal. At the time, the Wall Street Journal and Dow Jones and their other publications, Barron's, were considered worth about $3 billion, and Mr. Murdoch offered them $5 billion. And the family members said, oh. Some of them did not want to sell, but the majority of them said, "You dummy, take the money and run." And now it seems, although it's hard to tell just from looking at their publications and their websites, that the Dow was sold, or maybe leased, I'm not sure, to the Standard & Poor's company, which does the S&P 500. Because it doesn't look like the Wall Street Journal has anything to do with the Dow anymore. It looks like it's all done by Standard & Poor's, which is a different company. And this, by far, is the most famous. It's also the one of the least useful, because it only has 30 stocks. It started with 12 stocks back in 1896. Then they went to 20, and then they finally went to 30. And it used to be that these companies were the tried and true companies that everybody could rely on. But not so much anymore. It's really hard to pinpoint individual companies that are going to be around in the same way they were 30 years ago, 30 years from now. Technology changing so rapidly. So we're stuck with it. You can't get rid of it. But my advice is, you know, don't look at it. It's not that important. We'll see a couple others that are more important. But here they are, dear students, slide 51. Look at these. Now, most of these companies you know. Some of them you go, ooh, who are these people? And most of them have nothing to do with industrial whatsoever. There are very few industrial stocks left in the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which is, if I were in charge of it, I would just take the word industrial out and call it the Dow Jones Average. Who's Walgreens Boots? Well, that's the Walgreens, you know, that you and I know, the drugstore company. But they did an inversion, as it's called. They basically sold themselves to a tiny little company in Canada called Boots so they could reestablish themselves outside the United States and pay fewer taxes. But notice that there are very few industrial companies left. The one company that was in the Dow since 1896 until just a little bit ago was General Electric. But now, who do we have left? Honeywell is an industrial company. I guess you could say Dow Chemical. Caterpillar, they make tractors. Boeing. But none of the others are industrial companies. They're all either drug companies or insurance companies, technology companies, and the like. So, in my humble opinion, you just, you know, let, everyone talks about the Dow, just ignore it. However, there's a great exercise on the website in Canvas that asks you to go back in time and determine who the winner, just choose one. Would be, if you were given $10,000 86 years ago, what would you do with it? And it turns out, as we're going to see, picking stocks ain't easy, even in hindsight. So check out that little, this is in the face-to-face classes when we stop and do this exercise. Dow Jones has many other averages and indexes. And for the most part, we don't really have to worry about these. The two that we're going to key on here are the Dow Jones U.S. Total Stock Market Index and the Dow Jones U.S. Completion Total Stock Market Index, which are absolutely horrible names. They started out as the Wilshire 5000 and the Wilshire 4500, but Wilshire is a company based in Los Angeles that somehow got involved with Dow Jones, and then Dow Jones sort of kicked them to the side. I'm not sure how that worked out. But the idea is we want to keep tabs on the entire market. That was called the Wilshire 5000. It doesn't usually have 5,000 stocks in it, but the idea is to have large company, mid-sized companies, and small companies. And then we took that Wilshire 5000 and lopped off the top 500 companies. Those are the companies in the Standard & Poor's 500, the 500 largest companies in the United States, traditionally. A few of them are outside the United States. So in other words, the idea here is we'll look at everybody except for the largest companies. And we're going to come back to these two in a bit here, and you'll see why later on. The transportation average, some people actually pay close attention to the transportation average. Why? Because these are the railroads, the airlines, the freight companies. And when you're trying to see ahead in the economy, it makes sense to look at the transport companies, because before the stuff gets built, it's got to get to where it needs to go. And then before it gets sold, it's got to get to where it's going to be sold. So people will look at it as a leading indicator of what's going to happen in the economy 3, 6, 9 months from now. The utility average, well, that's pretty straightforward. How are utilities doing? Who cares? Well, no, people who are long-term investors who want a company that's not going to disappear into a pool of tears, they're the kind of people who watch at utilities. And utilities pay dividends, and we love dividends. And so if you take the Dow Jones Industrial Average plus the transportation average plus the utilities average, you get the Dow Jones Composite Average, which nobody really pays that much attention to. But it's something to know. And then we introduce, or we include, although there are many others, the Dow Jones Internet Index as an example of why boring is good and excitement and and buzz in the industry, in the financial and investment industry, sometimes is really, really bad. The Dow Jones Internet Index came out at the height of the internet bubble in the late 1990s and then proceeded to lose 96% of its value. Right. I'm waiting for that internet bubble, that internet fad to blow over any day now. Slide number 53. Here, finally, we've been using this thing all semester long. The Standard & Poor's 500. Who is Standard & Poor's? What's a company? And it used to be part of a company called McGraw-Hill, which, by the way, are the people who make many of your textbooks that charge over $300 for a book that's worth about $30 or $40. They no longer are part of that company. They split apart. But Standard & Poor's does research, and they've been doing it for decades. I've looked at some of the research. I wasn't too impressed, especially when you take it and compare it to the value line, which I'm very impressed with. But still, that's what they do. And they created this 500 composite index, the S&P 500, many, many decades ago. They were traditionally the 500 largest companies based in the United States, but now they may contain a few foreign stocks. Well, why is that? Well, many of you weren't alive, but in the late 1990s, Daimler-Benz, Mercedes-Benz, bought Chrysler. And so here was one of the largest companies in the United States purchased by a German company. What do we do? Well, S&P said, okay, throw Daimler, Chrysler, into the S&P 500. So you see, some of the companies were foreign. But then 10 years later, Mercedes wanted out of the deal. I think they bought it for about $36 billion. They bought Chrysler for $36 billion, and they sold Chrysler for $6 or $7 billion. Yeah, they made a bad choice. But the Standard & Poor's 500 is often the one that we look at because it contains the 500 largest companies. Very popular index. But because it is market-weighted, it was affected by the tech bubble of the late 1990s in a bizarre manner. The market values of a small percentage of technology companies were inflated to extremes, and this skewed the index even more toward those companies. Consequently, in 1998, 10% of the gain in the Standard & Poor's 500 was due to just one stock, and that was Microsoft. And folks, this is why I'm not a big fan of indices, index funds, because this happens from time to time. It's happening now. In fact, a bonus assignment for chapter 4. If you didn't do it, go back and do it. It's very simple. It won't take you all 5-10 minutes. Is to go and see what percentage the top 10 companies in the S&P 500 are in the entire index. How much of the index do just the top 10 companies make up? How much of the index do the top 50 companies make up? Which is why I think it should be called the S&P 500. No, the S&P 10, S&P 50, maybe even the S&P 5. No, the S&P 10, because it is skewed towards these very, very large companies. And herein lies the problem. And we discussed it already. And I'll again, for what it's worth, you decide. An index fund manager has no choice. As the company becomes worth more, they must buy more of that company, which, right, raises the price, which means that the company is worth more in the index, which then means that the index fund managers have to buy more of that company. You see the feedback mechanism, which spirals upward as things are going well. The mutual fund manager can't say, you know what, this is a great company, but it's just not worth what people are paying for it. I am going to sell it. No, they're not allowed to do that. An actively managed manager can do that. They can say, you know, it's a great company. It's just too much money. I'll wait for it to pull back and then maybe I'll buy some. The same thing happens when market prices are falling. As the value of the company becomes worth less, the index fund manager must sell. Whereas an active manager can say, you know what, this is a great company and now the price has really hit rock bottom. I'm going to buy more. Again, you're going to hear different viewpoints. I tell you my biases right up front so that you understand it. And the index fund managers and the index fund adherents can tell you why I'm an imbecile and don't know what I'm talking about. But that's why there's chocolate and vanilla and some people like strawberry. So that's the S&P 500. Probably the best measure of what's going on in our economy, but certainly not the only one. And then S&P has dozens of others, the Industrial 400, the Mid-Cap 400, the Small-Cap 600. You put the 500, the S&P 500, the large companies, the Mid-Cap 400, and the Small-Cap 600, and you get the S&P 1500 index. Again, none of these you're going to hear that much about unless you do a little bit of research on your own. And then they have transportation, utilities, financial, global, international sector indices. Standard & Poor's has dozens and dozens of indices. Now, what about the New York Stock Exchange, the Amex, and the NASDAQ? Well, they each created their own indices. But the only one you really hear that much about is the NASDAQ. And why is that? Because the NASDAQ is dominated by tech companies. Remember, the tech companies of the 1970s and 80s, once they got large enough, it was just assumed they were going to move to the New York Stock Exchange, and then they didn't. So when people take a look at the market as a whole, they'll look at the S&P 500 as a proxy, as a benchmark, as a standard for the market writ large, making up some 80% of the stock market capitalization value. But then they will look at the NASDAQ as what's going on in the technology sector, even though some of the companies in the NASDAQ are not technology companies. I mean, is Costco a technology company or Starbucks? No, but the largest companies and the most prominent ones are, like Apple and Google and Intel and Microsoft and Netflix and Amazon. NASDAQ also has a 100 index that you don't hear too much about. And this is what happened in the late 1990s, folks. the NASDAQ composite went from 800 in 1995 to 5,000 in the year 2000. And people thought, blue skies, productivity gains, we're all going to get rich, rich, rich. It then lost 80% of its value between March of 2000 and October of 2002. Yes. So we look at the Dow because of history. We look at the S&P 500 as a general gauge of the market as a whole. And we look at the NASDAQ for the technology sector. Now, here's a few other popular indices that we're going to basically review because we've already introduced them back when we talked about the Dow Jones indices. Dow Jones got together with a company called Wilshire, which had created this Wilshire 5000, which said, you know what, the S&P is great, but it's mostly large companies. Let's add small companies and mid-sized companies. And so what happened is Dow got together with Wilshire and said, oh, we like this idea. Let's call it the Dow Jones Wilshire 5000 Index. And then somehow they kicked Wilshire to the side of the road and took it over and called it the Dow Jones U.S. Total Stock Market Index, which I think is just absolutely ridiculous. And I can't remember it. But you have to be able to identify it. Why? Because many index funds are going to use that total stock market index. In fact, that's what they usually just call it, the total stock market index. And it's based on originally the Wilshire 5000, which is now called the Dow Jones U.S. Total Stock Market Index. And of course, Standard & Poor's has their own one. And this, who is this MSCI? We'll take a look at them in a bit. And then Wilshire said, you know what, this is great. We've got this index, the Wilshire 5000, that shows us the large companies, the small companies and the mid-sized companies. Let's take out the top 500 companies, which is the S&P 500, and that will give us an idea of what's going on with the mid-sized companies and the small companies. And that was called the Wilshire 4500. Then Dow Jones got together with them, Dow Jones Wilshire 4500, and then somehow kicked them to the side. And now they call it the Dow Jones U.S. Completion Total Stock Market Index. It's, again, they didn't ask me, but I would have told them that's a dumb name. And sometimes you'll hear people say extended. They'll use extended. That's what you're up against, folks. So, and so these two, we want you to at least be able to identify because you're going to see mutual funds. In fact, in Chapter 4, you did see one that are based on either one of these or both of these indexes. Slide 57, our last little group of indices that we should be familiar with. And the one that I like to take a look at, although most people don't even look at it, is the Wilshire 2000. Frank Russell Associates, another research organization. And Russell said, you know what? Let's take the top 3,000 companies and then lop off the top 1,000. So they have the Russell 1000, which is the top 1,000 companies. They have the Russell 3000, which is the top 3,000 companies. And to get the Russell 2000, they took away the top 1,000 companies. So from the 1,001st company up to the 3,000th company. And that was an idea, the idea here to show us what's going on with small company performance. And if you follow the Russell 2000, you will see it is far more volatile than the other larger indices, which makes a whole lot more sense. Small companies are more volatile. But it also gives us an idea of how things are going in the economy as a whole, because as we've said in the past, small companies get hammered when the economy does poorly. But then when the economy starts to pick up, they tend to... First of all, they got hammered pretty hard down the way down. So they're just catching up from where they were knocked down, the ones that survived. Plus, they're more able to quickly, nimbly maneuver to take advantage of new opportunities. And then, in about 1970s or so, there was a company that's still around called the American Funds Capital Group. that was investing globally and internationally and saying, you know what, there aren't really any indices that we can compare ourselves to. So they created two different indices, the World Index and the EAFE, Europe, Australia, and the Far East. And they found very quickly that this was not a good idea. Why? Because they were creating the index that they were measuring themselves against. That's a bad conflict of interest, right? And they realized it right away. It's refreshing to know that there are many people in the United States who do believe that you should not have a conflict of interest after having an administration that prided itself in conflicts of interest. And so what they did is they spun it off, because the people who run the American funds, their actual name is Capital, and Capital Research and Management. They were the company, or they still are, the company that makes the decisions for the American funds. And so they spun this group off called Capital International and sold it off to Morgan Stanley. That's why it's called Morgan Stanley Capital International. So people, they see MSCI, they don't know what it means, and you don't have to memorize that. That's just something for you to know about. But it has a long and storied history. And so what they created were the World Index to show what's going on globally, and the EAFE, Europe, Australia, and the Far East, which we've already, you know, made mention of it. And so, great, wonderful, fantastic. Well, what happened? Along the way, the developing world, the emerging markets, started to flex their muscle. And so instead of simply just changing the world and the EAFE indexes to include the rest of the world, the developing world, they've created two new indices, the MSCI All Country World Index and the MSCI All Country World Ex-USA Index. Again, why don't they ask me? I would have told them these are dumb names. But it doesn't matter. That's what we're stuck with. So, worksheet number one is right now, we would grab it out of our little pockets, our little packets, and go through worksheet number one. So you now, well, after a few more slides here, you now make sure you go through worksheet number one, because it has the seven or eight, I think it's eight, indices that you must memorize. By name, you must understand them and know them. There's no way anyone's going to study all the dozens of indices. But what are they? There's the Dow, the S&P 500, and the NASDAQ. And then the Wilshire 5000 and Wilshire 4500, which that's what I still call them. The Dow Jones U.S. Total Stock Market Index and the Dow Jones Completion Total Stock Market Index, or whatever the hell it's called. Then the Russell 2000. Then the Morgan Stanley Capital International, MSCI, you don't have to remember what that stands for, but the World and the EAFE, which are being replaced by the All Country World Index and the All Country World Ex-USA Index. So those are the eight. Those are the eight that you must memorize. Cool? Okay. Now, one of the things that you see every day on the news are graphs that show you how incredibly unstable our stock market is today. Today, the Dow Jones started at roughly 31,150 and rocketed up by noon to 31,159. And that's not really 12 a.m., it's 12 p.m. I gotta fix that. And then plummeted in the afternoon to 2 p.m. Nader. In the depths of 31,135, and then kind of ended pretty much where it started at 4 p.m. This is what you'll see every day on the news, on the internet. Stock market index mania, today's unstable stock market. Now, there's a wonderful book of the 1950s that the numbers are all wrong because it's, you know, 60, 70 years ago. But it's called How to Lie with Statistics. And this is one of the ways that people lie with statistics. What's the deal here? They're showing you a very small portion of the index, right? What if we included the axis, the zero, went all the way down to the bottom, the entire stock market, this is what it would look like. Stock market index ennui. You like that word ennui? It's French. Well, it's English, but it comes from the French, and it means beyond boredom, ennui. Yes, if they showed you the entire 32,000 from zero to 32,000, they wouldn't be able to sell many newspapers or television advertising or internet advertising, would they? No, no, no. So you will not see this graph on the nightly news or the internet. And now we can go back and re-examine the volatility that we saw before. Because if we indeed show our entire $0 to $10,000 that we invested in, even with that bear market in 2020, where we dropped 30% very quickly, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. And so take a long-term perspective. Realize that there's going to be times when the markets are going to fall, but don't panic. Don't just do something. Sit there. And by the way, you will not see this graph on the nightly news. No, no, no. But I really like this graph. I like to show this graph. You know, after we've seen the first one, go back and see the, you know, go back and if you don't remember it, because I've when especially in, well, of course, in the face-to-face class when I can actually see people's faces, you can just see their faces relax and go, oh, okay. Even when I lose money, it's not going to be the end of the world, and if it is the end of the world, doesn't matter where your money is. Okay, cool. We are so proud of you, dear students. Study, study hard. Go back over. Make sure you can identify and describe those eight major indices. And we will see you in our next presentation. Onward and upward, dear students.